This is David Harlow for Diabetes Innovation. I have with me today Grace Terrell from Cornerstone Healthcare in the great state of North Carolina. Welcome.
Thank you.
So please tell us, if you would, in a few words about your practice, where you're located, what kind of patients you're seeing, and what you're doing to hack diabetes.
Okay. Cornerstone Healthcare is a multi-specialty medical practice in the Piedmont Triad area of North Carolina, which is the Greensboro, Winston, Hickory area. And it's in High Point, and it is a practice that's about 50% primary care, 50% specialist, who are in about 85 different practice sites over a two-hour sort of driving distance between two sort of ends of it. And we're on staff at 15 different hospitals. We're part of, I think, eight different health systems. So we also are an accountable care organization within the context that we have decided to focus all of our energies on moving from volume to value and have 100% of our contracts now in a value-based contract such that we're paid for improving population health, including with quality parameters as well as efficiencies and costs. So
sure.
With that,
you said 100% of your contracts are now value-based payments?
Yes.
And is there any other organization in your state that could make a similar claim?
I don't think so, but I, you know, we've got a lot of other organizations in our state that are also well on the road to be value-based organizations, including several accountable care organizations that have some contracts, both commercial or Medicare shared savings.
Great. So I believe I cut you off. You're starting to talk about some of the quality measures that you're looking
at.
Yeah.
So one of the things, obviously, that is one of the biggest challenges in population health has to do with diabetes and its enormous impact it has on quality of life for patients and its increasing prevalence, particularly as the population is aging. So there's not a contract out there that we have that doesn't focus on diabetes as the first and foremost population health issue to tackle within the context of both the cost as well as looking at quality parameters. So a lot of the focus that we've spent has been on evaluating what sort of ways we can put things in place to really address that part of our patient population.
So how has that led you to change your delivery, care delivery model? And before getting into the specifics of that, you mentioned before that you have a very large number of practice sites. So I'm imagining that some of them are with a relatively small number of clinicians present at each site?
Yes.
Is that correct?
You know, there's many in some rural areas. And some of those practices, you know, have a larger number of physicians. Some of them are aggregated into a couple of large ambulatory centers. But a lot of North Carolina, if you haven't been here, is rural. And a lot of the area we serve, even though we're in an urban area as well, goes out into some of these smaller communities where there are still small family practices or internal medicine or pediatric practices.
Sure. And so the total patient population that you serve is approximately how large?
Last year, we saw something like 250,000 individual patients.
Okay. And the number of clinicians in your offices?
We've got about 250 physicians and about, at this point, 120 advanced practice providers such as nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, or physician assistants.
Great. Okay. So we're starting to talk about the move from volume to value and what that means in terms of caring for a population and looking at markers for diabetes, quality measures for diabetes and dealing with patients with diabetes. The question then for me is how has this move changed the approach to practice in the office?
Okay. And up until recently, I think the way most people thought about healthcare was very provider-centric, either hospital-centric or physician-centric, in the context that it had to do with the way we were paid, and it was about the 15-minute office visit, and the patient came in to the office, and everybody had the same sort of way of interacting with the healthcare system, which was, you got your visits, some talk occurred, some physical exam occurred, some tests occurred, and then some information or procedures were pushed back out to the patient. Well, that may be the right kind of approach in the old days, but it's not very patient-centered, and it's not a really good way at thinking about things comprehensively from a population standpoint. So the way we begin thinking about a population of patients is that they are different. So you've got the healthy patients, you've got those that are at risk for chronic disease, you've got those who are with early or controlled chronic diseases, you've got those with late end-stage polychronic illness, you've got acute problems, and then you've got the frail elderly or those that are at the end of life. And so the way we basically thought through this is saying, okay, let's just assume that if you were going to start from scratch, you wouldn't treat everybody the same with a 15-minute office visit. What you would do would be to say, how might we approach these different groups? So within the context of diabetes, we basically have several new types of things that we're doing. The first was that we said, are there patients out there in the world who have gaps in care, such as a hemoglobin A1C greater than 8, an LDL that was not to goal, or a blood pressure that was not controlled, and who haven't seen a primary care physician within 6 months? And with that, we were able to identify those patients with some analytic tools that we've invested in. And rather than making it all about the patient that's in front of us in the office, we said, what about those that are not in the office? So we hired some very good customer service trained nursing assistants, usually by background, or medical assistants by background, so they had some healthcare knowledge, and trained them to be what we call our patient care advocates. And so the first thing we did is we honed in on our diabetic patients with those criteria of gaps in care or poor control. And we just simply called them up and invited them to come back in to see us. And so this was an outreach, and we were able to identify patients that were out there in the world not receiving care. Another thing that we did is we then went in and we started risk stratifying our patients into those groups that we talked about before. And for those that had what are high Charlson scores, which is a index of a severity index for illness, we created a couple of practices that were specifically related to them. And so, we have patients with typically five or six chronic illnesses. Nearly all of them have diabetes because that tends to be one of the ones that goes along with so many others. And we created teams of people that were to basically not have the tyranny of the 15-minute office visit, but just spend as much time with them as possible, when and how and where it needed to be. So they may come in and have a two-hour office visit the first time. And there would be a team involving navigators, and it would involve care coordinators and disease management specialists, nurse practitioners, and a physician leading those teams. And then we have also with a major pharmaceutical chain, and I don't think they're wanting this announced yet, but we have been having a beta site where we actually have health coaches in the pharmacy that's working on medication adherence and other types of things such as diet, exercise, smoking cessation, weight loss, specifically with these same patients. So that's sort of three things we're doing: polychronic clinics, the patient care advocates, and the health coaching with the pharmacy partner.
Well, that sounds great. I guess my question about reaching out to patients who are at risk and who haven't been in to see you recently would be this: how do you motivate people who have managed to avoid the office visit to come in?
Well, one of the things that we have found out with the patient care advocates calling is that quite often we find it's because they've had a bad experience, or it may be because they are feeling bad about not doing well. I'll give you a personal example. There was a patient of mine, I'm a general internist and still see patients a couple of mornings a week, that had come in about a year ago to see me, and I had made the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes early onset, and this is before we had any of this in place, or this was a couple of years ago. And what I did is I did what I usually do, which I ordered up all the stuff that needed to be done, including a consult with a nutritionist and the eye exam, the immunizations, and all that, and basically with a three-month follow-up to see me back. Well, the patient didn't come back, and in the world that we were in, I don't know that I would have identified that patient. When the patient care advocate identified that the patient had skipped the appointment, she called the patient, and she found out a couple of things. And one of those things she found out was that her mother had died of diabetes, and she had wanted to try diet and exercise and all that, but she was really afraid of the diagnosis. So she was able to have that conversation with the patient care advocate, who was very empathetic. And the patient care advocate put a note on the chart, so when she came in to see me, I was able to start probably from a different place, which is not, you know, talking about adherence or compliance or any of the things that physicians tend to focus on, but getting her to talk about her feelings about the disease. And she's doing well, and she's just one example. So it's just that human stuff. It's reaching out to people, and it doesn't work all the time. I think we've been monitoring. We have about a 60% success at bringing them in. If they need to come in and have not and have been lost to the system, of those, we have a very high improvement rate in their blood sugar and lipid and blood pressure control. So we're not getting everybody, but we're starting to make a little bit of a difference.
Okay. And do you have can you share with me some examples of targets that may be built into some of your payer contracts in terms of quality measures? Are you trying to achieve improvements in through interventions on A1C levels, or are we looking at something different than that or something broader than that?
It just depends. We have different payers have focused on different things. So for some of them, it's a hemoglobin A1C less than 8, for example, or a hemoglobin A1C that's controlled. For others, it may be a lipid level, an LDL cholesterol level that's below 100 in somebody with a diagnosis of coronary disease, vascular disease, or diabetes. So there's different ones and different levels from the different payers. What we've chosen to do is take the approach that we want to be better or as good as our highest goal for every single one of these contracts. So if one contract says you need to have 50%, I'm just making up numbers, but you need to have 50% of your diabetics with a A1C less than 8, and then another one says you need to have 90%, then we make 91% our cornerstone goal for success. We basically hold our success up to whatever the highest one is, assuming that, all boats will be lifted by doing it that way. And so a lot of it is things like, it's the American College of Endocrinology, the American Diabetic Association, appropriate diabetic goals are the ones that are built into this, and then a lot of the contracts are about what percentage of your population meets these goals.
Okay. Now, doing all of this, of course, is more expensive than a traditional primary care practice has been in the past, and I'm wondering whether you're being compensated appropriately by the plan, since some of the savings would be experienced not only in the specialty care within the physician group, but in the hospitalizations. Does this all work out? Did this go into the calculation of appropriate value-based payments up front?
Well, that all the value-based contracts are based upon the concept that that there will be a shared savings component off the overall cost of care that can be shared, or it can be a full risk contract. And in North Carolina, that's something that we're not used to yet and will be doing shortly, but we don't have those yet. So the way a lot of these things work, there's different contracts with different people, different individuals, is quite often there will be an additional payment to primary care for management as opposed to, a per member per month type management fee.
Yes.
To partially offset the cost of these services. And then the other side of it is that there's a look back at the end of the contract, and there is a percent of savings that's calculated that goes back to the practices. So in order for us to achieve that, then we have to, both save money and meet quality parameters. In full risk contracts, like a lot of the country has been used to for years, but it's not present right now in North Carolina, there is money paid up front, and then you have to sort of you have the money from which you just make your decisions about investing. With the Medicare Shared Savings Program, as well as the type of commercial contracts that are coming on the market in North Carolina, you have to make the investment up front, except for some portion with some of the contracts might have a primary care management fee, with the hopes that if you're successful, you're going to get it on the backside with at the look back.
So it's certainly an issue to be conscious of, but it sounds like it's being dealt with in the contracts that you have.
As well as we can.
Yes, right. Well, so it sounds like you have been doing quite a lot on this front, and it is interesting to hear that you and your payer partners have seen diabetes as sort of a touchstone and a place to focus efforts as it brings folks in who have other diseases, other complications, but all tied back one way or another to the diabetes diagnosis.
Yes.
Are you expanding this program to include folks with pre-diabetes, or talking about prevention as well?
We have other efforts underway that are thinking about that portion of the population, and you make a very good point. It's not just about treating those who already have disease that's far along from a chronicity standpoint, but it's preventing others. The first place in the contracts to go are those that are the sickest, because that's where the most potential savings and improvement can
sure.
be. But as we get better with this, what needs to happen next is a much larger focus on prevention, such as you're talking about. So Cornerstone is large enough to be self-insured. So one of the first things that we're doing right now is with our own employee population, we've got about 1,800 employees, we are creating and designing our own benefits around certain aspects of wellness, so that if we have wellness behaviors, if we have, if our employees do certain things, then there is a benefit to them in our benefits design. In addition, we've actually talked about and are looking at our own diabetic or early diabetic or pre-diabetic in our employee population and seeing if we can create some benefits designed to address those exact things. So, for example, ought there to be certain medications that are free of any copay? Ought there to be free membership in gyms? This is a conversation that we're having right now at the level of our own HR department, and we believe that if we're able to come up with something on our own selves that's helpful, then as we partner with other employers in the community and payers in general, then we can give them evidence that we practice what we preach and that it makes a great deal of impact in the long run.
That sounds great. So what do you hope to learn, or what kinds of people do you hope to meet when you come to the Diabetes Innovation Conference in D.C.?
Oh, that's a great question. I learn so much the minute that I leave my own community, because everybody out there is so smart and are trying. I totally believe that most physicians and others in healthcare want to do the right thing. We're in a very, very tough time in the healthcare delivery system, and when you get a bunch of folks together that are excited about talking about innovation, then everybody wins and everybody benefits. So we have never minded sharing some of our ideas of the things we're doing in Cornerstone, and don't claim that any of them are particularly invented by us. They're types of things that we just all need to put into play. So I'm looking forward to hearing what other people are doing and figure out how we can make what we're doing better and apply that in ways that we haven't done here yet. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure others will be benefiting from learning from you as well. Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with Dr. Grace Terrell, Chief Executive Officer of Cornerstone Healthcare. This is David Harlow for Diabetes Innovation.